The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. We've got a lot to talk about today, but I've just got to say one thing right off the bat. Stop trying to make Chelsea Clinton a thing. Quit with the half-witted social media posts and the tweets. Enough with the cutesy magazine covers with that forced BS smile like the one in Vanity Fair. Please put an end to the nominations for Lifetime Achievement Awards. Stop it. Enough. Not to mention the award for the commitment in fighting hunger, the award she received for fighting hunger in New York City at the annual City Harvest Award. This is from Heat Street. Like her mother before, Chelsea Clinton appears to be creating a cottage industry for herself and receiving random awards for her unparalleled contributions to society. Taking on current events and incredibly generous heart. Not content with just her Variety-sponsored achievement award, Chelsea, on last Tuesday night, accepted the annual City Harvest Award for Commitment in Fighting Hunger in New York City, as reported in the Mail Online. What achievement has she actually accomplished in her lifetime? Does anyone ask that question? Which has barely even begun. I mean, what, she's like 30? Remember, the left builds up their champions, their narratives, their next big things, their phenomenons by giving out unqualified awards. You want to follow the next progressive thing? Follow the accolades. I mean, that's why you see movies that are highly political receiving awards before they even come out. Somebody must have seen it. Somebody must have thought it was good. Just follow the accolades. And Chelsea's only claim to fame was being born to a bunch of corrupt politicians. Her talent and skill set was being lucky enough to be born to the 42nd president of the United States. You know, like all of the proletariat little guys, the working people. Chelsea Clinton, the young professional, yikes, started her career at a consulting firm, McKinsey & Company, before moving on to the hedge fund Avenue Capital Group. She has also taught graduate classes at Columbia University. Don't know why. And worked for the New York University in the past. That's amazing, too. How she did that, I'll never know. She was given a $600,000-a-year gig with NBC, having absolutely no journalism experience. But she wanted to focus on her work at the Clinton Foundation, which is now closed. And while it was still operational, she was part of the generous and gracious acts of laundering money from Islamic nations who are diametrically opposed to the actual war on women memes and narratives. She was working for that gracious philanthropic organization, the Clinton Foundation, that creatively sold nuclear uranium to the Russian government. You know, working for that gracious organization that helped so many, that was given the shaft to the Haitian citizens in their recovery efforts in rebuilding. She was busy giving speeches about the dire crisis that afflicts our globe, diarrhea.
I hear you are obsessed with diarrhea.
I am obsessed with diarrhea.
Why?
I'm obsessed with diarrhea because in the 21st century, I think it's completely unacceptable that still across the world, more than 750,000 children die every year due to severe dehydration due to diarrhea. I just think that's unconscionable. And in the United States, at least in New York City, I don't know about Miami, where you live now, but at least in New York, where you used to live, at the beginning of the 20th century, the leading causes of childhood death are the same as they are today in the 21st in the developing world. Severe dehydration due to diarrhea.
She is also the, quote, alternate universe's current first daughter of the United States. I kid you not. Look, like it or not, Trump changed the political candidacy game. And I said this months ago. To humor a run for office, you got to start invading the culture, like, immediately. You've got to be rooted in areas of the culture with absolutely no political connection. You have to make that personal connection with people that may not have any sort of vested interest in politics, or even if they do, it's a very, very slight passing one. You have to be able to meet the uninformed, low-information citizen, and they must be able to know your name immediately. And it must be a name brand with which they can identify with as soon as they hear it, as soon as they see it. And it's got to be accomplished early on to effectively connect with the public to take root. You must be able to do a personal connection. And that personal connection's got to be organic. It can't be forced, manufactured, or contrived. People have to want you to be a thing. And it looks as though Chelsea Clinton's trying to establish that. But the problem is, there's no personal connection. Just like mommy, very unlikable. And what the left is doing to manufacture her persona should be of no surprise to anybody. I mean, that's what they did with Bill Clinton and Hillary. You know, when teenage girls were going gaga over this older gentleman's underwear choice, when Bill Clinton was running for office, you know, boxers or briefs. I mean, really? Do you want to see what that crusty guy's going to wear? I mean, it was all contrived. When everyone thought it was so cool to see someone playing a saxophone on Arsenio Hall, that was all BS too. By the way, playing a sax in a rock band's coolness died when Tackleberry played it on stage in the Police Academy movies, okay? Don't put the sax solo in the music that rocks anymore because it doesn't work. It's not cool. It died in the 80s. But I digress. Bill Clinton walking on the shores of Normandy. You remember that? Just out of the blue, looking around, going, there's no monument. Taking some rocks and making a cross. Completely manufactured. I mean, the romantic walk on the beach as the first couple, you know, they were dancing and showing just such pure love for each other. A day before the Monica Lewinsky story hit the news, completely contrived as well. So to think Chelsea Clinton's going to be this social media thing for a political career, it's in the same convoluted pattern, only it's not going to work. As hard as the media tries to prop her up on magazine covers, fluff pieces, late night talk shows, it's going to completely fall flat. Much like a frat boy's first college party throwdown, it's going to collapse under its own drunken weight. And that's how it's gone down from here on out. That's how it's going to go down. Build your culture personality up now. You'll need to be firmly ensconced by 2020. And will it be Tom Hanks? Will it be George Clooney? How about Kanye West? How about Mark Cuban? I mean, he's a businessman. Remember, we need a businessman to come in and get things done, you know, just like we're witnessing. But we don't need a businessman to run the nation, as we think we do. You can't run a business without a budget. You can't run a business with a continuing resolution. But that's what we're doing. Yep. And even though we've been doing it for well over the past 8 to 10 years, it's not like President Business is doing it now. They're not singing, everything is mega. Everything is cool when you jumped on the train. Everything is mega. You don't want to hear me sing again, but you get the point. He's given us Taco Tax Reform Tuesday, which we're going to cover in a moment. It's kind of good, but you know what? He's not given us everything that we've put him in office for. And the problem with the Democrats, though, on the other hand, is they have no bench. They could pull Joaquin Castro, the Postmaster General or something? Whatever the heck he is, they can pull him up from the bottom of the pile and maybe make him into a thing. And maybe they can pull it from their leadership. Probably not the best move. I mean, just listen to the new DNC chairman, Tom Perez, cursing up a storm in his speeches.
We have a president who day in and day out, it's chaos. It's carnage. He's a damn liar. That's what I say, pal. You're goddamn right he's a liar. He even did an executive order yesterday. Buy American. Make sure we do that. Well, you know what, folks? Why don't you apply that to your own damn family business? You know, you got the Trump towers, you got Trump steaks, you got Trump ties or suits or, you know, things like that. But he won't call it. He says, no, it's Ryan Care. It's Trump Care. Well, I have a name for it. It's I Don't Care, because the Republican leadership doesn't give a shit about people who are suffering. No one will lose coverage. That's bullshit, my friends. Well, guess what happened? That turned out to be, let me be more polite because I just saw a young child in the audience. And the budget is another example of broken promises. The budget is bankrupt. They call it a skinny budget. I call it a shitty budget.
All right, look, Mr. Perez, you're not going to be able to expletive your way into relevancy, okay? Sorry, just because you're following the Trump bomb the you-know-what out of them formula of dropping F-bombs in speeches and just throwing in expletives here and there, just toss them around. It's not going to make you feel like that's not going to make you a real or every person candidate. Okay, you're not going to connect with a bunch of people just out there just cursing up a storm. I mean, some people have the ability to do that, but that's not what they're relying their message on. They have a bigger message underneath it, and they just add that for effect. But you, sir, Mr. Perez, you're not offering any of that. So let's keep this in mind. Chelsea Clinton, even though she says, oh, I'm not running for president, don't they all say that? Don't they all, when they have aspirations a couple years out, they go, oh, no, no, I'm not going to do that. And next thing you know, you see them on a ballot somewhere. You see their friggin' last name stuck up on a poster in somebody's front yard. That will happen whether we like it or not. The problem is the fact that they're trying to build this persona is something that's going to grate on all of our nerves for a long period of time. And on Twitter and on social media outlets, you can see her show up to try to throw her wit around. And yet, it's so easy to knock her down just because of the fact that what she says is just vapid garbage. Anyways, we're going to talk more about the tax reform, which I actually kind of like. That's my Taco Tax Tuesday. Stick around. It's Adrian Slade.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
In as much of the same way as Chelsea Clinton is fighting against diarrhea and being awarded for battling hunger in New York City, you know, maybe if they rolled back the bagel slicing tax that causes them to be $15 a bagel, they could start solving some of that hunger problems. Hillary is fighting for you as a part of the resistance.
I'm now back to being an activist citizen and part of the resistance.
She's fighting for you, the stay-at-home mom.
I suppose I could have stayed home and baked cookies and had teas, but what I decided to do was to fulfill my profession, which I entered before my husband was in public life.
Fighting for you, the minority African-American.
If you don't tell black people what we need to do...
I understand what you're saying.
Also respectfully.
Yeah. Respectfully, if that is your position, then I will talk only to white people.
She's fighting for you, the working class, flyover nation citizen.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it.
And she's working for you, the female who has been exploited.
This guy was accused of raping a 12-year-old. He was the daughter of a family he was living in. Springfield. He lived on the side of the track in Springfield. Of course, he claimed that he did all this stuff. He took a lie detector test. I had to take a polygraph, which he passed.
How did it turn out?
He plea bargained. He got him off with time served in the county jail. He'd been in the county jail about 2 months.
Hillary Clinton told CNN's Christian Amanpour at a Women for Women event in New York, quote, if the election had been on October 27th, I would be your president. Quote, I take absolute personal responsibility. I was the candidate. I was the person who was on the ballot, and I'm very aware of the challenges, the problems, the shortfalls that we had, Clinton said, before adding that she was, quote, on the way to winning until a combination of Jim Comey's letters on October 28th and the Russian WikiLeaks raised doubts in the minds of people who were inclined to vote for me and got scared off. I mean, that's the equivalent of Hillary Clinton acting as though it's like Scooby-Doo. She goes, and I would have been your president if it hadn't been for James Comey, WikiLeaks, and those meddling Russian kids. And of course, James Comey, he feels mildly nauseous at the possibility of influencing the election by the Hillary Clinton email probe. But you know what? It's something that needed to be done. Clinton, who is currently writing a book that partly reflects on her 2016 loss, added, the reason I believe we lost were the intervening events in the last 10 days. Clinton, as she has done in the past, also hung on to part of her 2016 loss on misogyny. Yes, I do think it played a role. I think other things did as well, Clinton said. But repeatedly, Clinton came back to Russian President Vladimir Putin's role in the 2016 election and how he was able to tilt the scale in favor of Trump against her. Clinton, aides say, sees her role as the Trump years as a political activist who speaks out when an issue she cares about is threatened. And on Tuesday, it was clear that Clinton was ready to settle into that role. "I am back to being an activist citizen and part of the resistance," Clinton said, drawing cheers from the crowd that included her former aides, donors, and celebrities like actress Meryl Streep. There you go. The former Secretary of State also pledged to, quote, publicly request that the Trump administration, quote, not end our efforts, making women's rights and opportunities central to U.S. policy. I mean, misogyny? Does it have to do with she has absolutely no charisma? She is not a likable person.
Wait, you want me to tell you what my husband thinks? My husband is not the Secretary of State. I am. So you ask my opinion, I will tell you my opinion. I'm not going to be channeling my husband.
Right to work is wrong for workers and wrong for America. Now, having said all this, why aren't I 50 points ahead, you might ask? Well, the choice for working families has never been clearer. I need your help to get Donald Trump's record out to everybody. Nobody should be fooled.
Now, it's all misogyny. Has absolutely nothing to do with the decades of scandal that the Clintons were continually embroiled in, such as, you know, Hillary Clinton being let go from the Watergate investigation with Richard Nixon. The Whitewater Realty scam, they ended up putting a clause in there to where if you just were late on a payment, one payment, they foreclosed on your home and resold it for a profit. And the fact that the Rose Law Firm that Hillary Clinton was involved with provided legal services to that realty company that she was involved with. Also, how about the cattle futures trading? Hillary Clinton engaged in a series of trades of cattle future contracts. Her initial $1,000 investment generated a nearly $100,000 when she stopped trading after 10 months. In 1994, Clinton had become the first lady of the United States. The trading became somewhat of a considerable controversy because the likelihood of a spectacular rate of return and a possible conflict of interest, wow, no, nothing new there, and allegations of disguised bribery had occurred. What about Travelgate when they fired the White House travel office and tried to replace it with their friends so that their friends can benefit from the travel of the White House? Or maybe, you know, they get a kickback on the backside. You know, the Clintons are notable for that. Benghazi, gun running campaign. You know, we're sending weapons into Al-Qaeda, which is al-Nusra, and, you know, we end up taking them from Gaddafi. We let the Benghazi consulate burn to the ground, let Chris Stevens and the security team die on the premises, all because we didn't want it exposed. You know, it's just like when we dropped weapons in the hands of al-Qaeda instead of the Free Syrian Army. We're like, oops, my bad. Oh, God, I hate when that happens. Oh, man, you know, al-Qaeda gets more weapons again. But, you know, maybe those were the reasons why you didn't win elected office. It was simply attacks by the FBI and misogyny that made Clinton lose. I mean, is this the same misogyny that is continually ignored by the left with regards to their endearing viewpoints towards Islam, who won't let women drive and even show their faces in public? The same misogyny that dismisses the dealings of a sexual predator in the form of her husband? Is this the same war on women? I mean, Hillary Clinton is completely unlikable, and when we went into the election, we knew we had the choice between possibly Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton before Ted Cruz jumped in the race, before Donald Trump jumped in the race. So we knew that we had the same old that we've had for decades, and we were tired of it. Going into it, before it even started, we were like, oh, got a Clinton, we got a Bush, can we get something different? So you take that, you take the fact that Hillary Clinton isn't even nearly as likable as Bill Clinton. I mean, at least Bill Clinton could sell you some BS along with his scandals and might make a few people go, ha ha, he's kind of funny about it. Yeah, you know, he's a likable guy. But Hillary Clinton didn't even have that approach. She's always shrill, always combative. And so you take all of that and wrap it up together and you've got a package for a candidate who is completely awful, always under investigation, always questioned on ethics, and at the same time, she does everything the way she wants to her financial benefit. I'm going to use my private server. I'm going to use my private communications devices, and I'm going to do so around the FBI. I'm going to do so around protocol. because I am above everybody else, and that is the liberal mindset. There is a group of people in the progressive left who want to be your ruler. They want to control and oversee everything you do and never have those rules apply to them. You know, they're above reproach. They're just better than everybody else. So you should bow down to them because they know what's better. When they can't even manage their finances, they can't even conduct business dealings without a scandal involved. They can't even try to pull some sort of crazy regime change without destroying an entire nation and on top of it, killing our ambassador and our security team to cover him. Everything she touches falls apart and is a bumbling mess. And so for us to sit here and think, well, you know, we should give all of our control over to this person is just completely naive. I mean, the establishment on both sides had been to the point where everybody was fed up with it. We wanted somebody different. Unfortunately, Trump cloaked himself within that difference and took it, hijacked it, and ran with it. And everybody glommed onto it, thinking he was what he was, but he wasn't. But that's another story. But people were wanting real hope and change and didn't want the same old, same old. That is why you lost. Had nothing to do with misogyny. Misogyny isn't even nearly a thing as you people on the left like to pretend that it is. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Okay, let's talk Trump tax reform. Last Wednesday, Donald Trump issued his tax proposal. The direction towards spurring the economy while removing the boot of government off the necks of the private sector and the American citizen seems to be where we're focused. And although a lot of people are going to be focused this week on the travesty that has passed through the House of what was Obamacare that is now Ryan Care that will ultimately be Trump Care, I'm going to leave that to the pundits to talk about all week. Let's look at the bright side and let's leave that aside because it still has to make it into the Senate. Let's look at Trump's tax reform. And this is my wheelhouse. I've had to take tests on the tax code. I had to study the tax code. Lots of fun there. Yeah, let me tell you how fun that is. But had to study the tax code, had to learn inside and out what it's about, how it can be used, how you can navigate through it to better your own financial situation. And in doing so, you learn a lot of interesting things. And when I can put the lens of what I've learned on Donald Trump's tax proposal, it's actually not a bad proposal overall. So let's dig through the details and get the media spin out of the way to find out what it means for you and I. First, simplifying the tax brackets. That's always a no-brainer. It's always good. Going from seven current tiers, seven different brackets of taxation just down to three, 10%, 25%, and then the top rate of 35%. That's an excellent start. We don't know what income level these brackets are going to occur at, so that remains to be seen. Now, the standard deduction would double in amount for married individuals, which is also really good news. I mean, usually the choice comes down to, well, do I choose, what choice would yield the higher deduction? Do I choose the standard deduction or can I itemize and have a better situation at the end of it all? I mean, would the standard deduction be a beneficial item than itemizing? You know, the theory behind this move is that the increased standard deduction would lead to avoiding the need to itemize deductions in most instances. And that's usually the case. I mean, if you think about it, what really pushes you over the edge, especially for married couples who aren't homeowners, it's kind of a no-brainer to look towards the standard deduction because typically the one deduction that actually benefits you the most as far as making the decision to either do the standard deduction or itemize is the home interest loan deduction. So if you don't outright have a mortgage on a home that you are purchasing, 9 times out of 10, it's probably a waste of time to even humor itemizing your taxes. So a standard deduction is usually the better deal. But if the standard deduction is at a level that actually makes your mortgage interest null and void as far as a decision between the two, well, then there's no need to itemize. That saves an entire filing. That saves you money with your tax preparer as far as how much you have to pay for preparation because they don't have to file the itemization filing. And on top of it, it just makes it simpler all the way around. It's also called for the elimination of most itemized tax deductions. You know, people are scratching their head. They're like, oh, how is that going to affect me? They're going to take away some things to itemize. But it would also leave in place popular deductions like the mortgage interest deduction and charitable contributions. Now, giving to a charity that benefits society, that's a good thing. We want to encourage that. So you leave that in. Of course, you're encouraging home ownership, property rights, property ownership. That right there is the cornerstone to republicanism. That is the cornerstone to capitalism, is property ownership. So home interest deductions for a mortgage for the cost of purchasing that home, yeah, make that deductible as well. But overall, you know, sometimes people, they think, well, maybe the medical expense deduction will go away and that'll be bad. That's not usually a factor in itemizing deductions. You know how much money you would need to incur as far as expenses on medical expenses before you even hit the 10% threshold of adjusted income? Basically, you take your gross income, everything that you make, you know, your wife, you combine it all together. Maybe it's just yourself. You just take your gross income, you take off a couple off the top deductions, and that leads you to where you're at. You take 10% of that, and any dollar over 10% of that amount is what you can actually start putting towards a deduction. So basically, yeah, you'd have to be terminally ill to make that happen. So, which is funny because if you think about Obamacare, one of the things they did for the first time ever, they upped that deduction threshold from 7.5% of your income that's adjusted after those top line deductions to 10%. So it's not like they didn't see that these higher deductibles were going to cause people to pay a lot more out of pocket, which in doing so is going to allow the possibility of having a medical expense deduction without a terminal disease. So obviously they had the foresight to make that adjustment in the tax code. Although you or I, if we didn't know the tax code, wouldn't have any idea about that. But basically you'd have to be terminally ill to get to that level of cost on the average. So don't fret about those receipts from the doc in the box over trips for the flu and maybe a broken bone or two. That's not ever going to be a problem. So if they get rid of that, it's not a big deal. Now, the estate tax and the alternative minimum tax, we've all railed against them for years, repealed under this plan. And from my experience, the reasoning for the estate tax, aka the death tax, is to eliminate possible tax shelters or being creative with tax havens. You know, they're basically trying to avoid somebody who's taking some assets and creatively moving them in these estates to avoid taxation. But on the other side of the coin, it also penalizes those that want to leave something behind to loved ones who, you know, an individual has earned over its lifetime. A person has earned with their blood, sweat, and tears and want to pass it down to their family members. That estate tax would be moved out of the way. So this would encourage people to build economic legacies for their loved ones. Now, on a previous show, we went over the alternative minimum tax, basically a mundane tax, should be removed. It's basically a dual calculation of the deductions. You have to remove certain deductions, but then if you're over a certain income level, you take a side-by-side and add certain deductions back in, calculate that tax, and add that on top of the tax that you normally have. So, I mean, basically, if you're a wealthy individual, you get hit twice over a certain level, and you get tax deductions removed, and then you're stripped of those deductions because you make a lot of money. Doesn't really encourage success. Now, the other one is that 3% capital gains that's applied to Obamacare. I mean, that's another thing in the tax code that should have lent you to the decision that Obamacare is a ruse. I mean, they're basically going to take investors selling investment assets, short-term gains, and tacking on an additional 3% just so they can fund medical care, government medical care. I mean, that's ridiculous. Why do they need that extra funding? But apparently they wrote that in the beginning because they knew funding was going to be an issue. So Trump's taking that out. Good for him on that. President Trump is looking at cutting the tax rate to 15% for large corporations, which now pay a rate of 35%. So why is that a good thing? First off, the majority of companies aren't even typically C corporations. C corporations are your big, you know, private companies that are public. They've had their IPO, the initial public offering, and they sell their shares on the stock market. But companies that are C corporations aren't as many when you put it up against S corporations. You put it up against LLCs, LPs. Those are pass-through entities. And C corporations are taxed on the revenue when they earn them. and then taxed again when it's distributed to its shareholders at the shareholder level. So that's double taxation. Now, for S-corps and LLCs and LPs, the money just flows through. They write it on an informational thing to send into the government on this is how much money we got, but it goes to the individual percentage shareholders. So for a business to be able to retain more of its revenue, it's going to allow them to have more capital to pull from in order to grow. Expansion of business operations will incur because of that. Increased hiring due to a growing workforce is going to happen. Equipment and infrastructure revitalization is going to occur, hopefully, if they're confident in the economy. You're going to see more spending on companies who can provide those items and services to these businesses that are now able to retain more revenue. This, in turn, is going to allow those companies the ability to earn increased revenue to possibly expand and grow their business as well. More inventory and raw materials purchasing is going to occur, benefiting those companies that offer that service and that product, and businesses that will see sales increase will benefit them. So it just flows everywhere. But Chuck Schumer wouldn't know that. And the New York Times wouldn't know that. From the New York Times, Mr. Trump also wants that rate for a broad range of firms known as pass-through entities, including hedge funds and real estate concerns like Mr. Trump's and large partnerships that currently pay taxes at individual rates, which top off at 39.6%. Let's not forget about the point that I just made. Pass-through entities are S-corps, small businesses. They're your mom-pa businesses. They're actually even general partnerships. You know, two people write a partnership agreement on paper, pass-through entity, LLPs, LLCs. They encompass the majority of businesses in America. It's not just hedge funds and real estate concerns. I mean, many of these entities are small businesses, as I've said, and the media always wants to point to these hedge funds and these capitalists. They're evil capitalists. You know, the Bernie Sanders voter who thinks anyone in business is evil, greedy, and degenerate. Just keep in mind, this actually benefits a huge chunk of the middle class, the small business owner. And if you're not a small business owner, you're going to benefit from the double standard deduction or the remaining mortgage interest deduction if you itemize. So not a bad proposal if you ask me. And this is where Chuck Schumer comes into play. The New York Times wrote that the concern would be that lawyers and doctors and consultants and other wealthy people in partnerships could structure much of their personal income as business income, effectively reducing their tax rate down from 39.6 to 15%. Schumer said, "We don't need a tax plan that allows the very rich to use pass-throughs to reduce their rates to 15% while the average Americans are paying more. That's not tax reform. That's just a tax giveaway to the very, very wealthy. Really. The entire premise right there is false, because for tax purposes, a business can either be classified as a separate tax-paying entity or a flow-through entity or a pass-through, as I said before. C corporations, separate tax-paying entities. Sole proprietorships, S corporations, partnerships, your pass-through or flow-through entities. And what's even funnier is that what he's talking about with lawyers and with, you know, accountants and doctors, they have to form what's called personal service corporations or professional service corporations, PLCs. This entity is designed specifically for those with regulated professional licenses, attorneys, engineers, architects, doctors, public accountants, lawyers. You know, they can't receive these special benefits of pass-throughs as he's talking about, because personal service corporations are taxed exactly as a separate tax-paying entity, exactly like a C corporation. So they get taxed as the money comes in, and as they get taxed when it's delivered to each individual shareholder. So the Democrat talking points against these tax proposals are focused on playing on the ignorance of the public. They push the narrative of the evil, rich, Mr. Moneybags Monopoly Man persona. Based on economics and the punitive effects of current taxation, this could be an excellent beginning to spurring the economy that has been running on fumes for over the last 8 years. I'm Adrian Slade. I'll be back.
This is Adrian Slade.
Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So we went over Trump's tax plan, and we see that, you know, I think it's a good plan so far. And the thing that we see also is that the left has a new talking point. They think, oh, well, you know, this is all about emboldening the rich and the wealthy. You know, they always have to find some sort of angle, some sort of special interest that is disenfranchised. And of course, they're now doing the same thing. I want to give you an example of a story I was reading just the other day that really just got me. And when you dig in deeper, you start to find out that it's just another freaking leftist attack. And this is the Boy Scouts. That's right. Freaking Boy Scouts of America. Let's talk about misogyny that we talked a couple segments ago that Hillary Clinton says is what ousted her from being able to be your president. And let's talk about how misogyny comes into play with the freaking Boy Scouts. According to the Boy Scout law, this from NPR, a scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. But does a Boy Scout have to be a boy? Oh, really? Sydney Ireland has been involved with scouting since she was 4 years old, when she began tagging along with her brother to Cub Scout meetings. Since then, she's been an unofficial but enthusiastic member of Troop 414 in Manhattan. She's now 16 and she's pushing Boy Scouts of America to allow girls like her to become official members. Over the years, Sydney's activities with the troop have included camping trips, hiking, archery, ice climbing, and yes, knot tying. But although the troop has welcomed Sydney's participation, she is not able to officially earn merit badges and advance in rank along with the boys around her because she's a girl. According to national policy, the Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts only enroll boys, including transgender boys, as of earlier this year. Yeah, thank you liberals for that. But Sydney is a girl, and to her, the policy doesn't seem fair. It's not fair. For the last few years, she's been asking the Boy Scouts of America to let girls officially join through letters to the national leadership, public op-eds, and a change.org petition. Quote, "I just want to see a change," she said. "Right now they're discriminating against girls." Why? Because it's called the freaking Boy Scouts! Anyways, "I'm just calling it as it is." Yeah, that's what it's always called. The Boy Scouts of America declined to be interviewed and would not comment on whether the organization plans to review their policy. However, Director of Communications Effie DeLamarcos did say that the organization, quote, "continually works with scouts to evaluate and improve programs to better serve youth participants." They went on to say, "We understand the values and lessons of scouting are attractive to the entire family. The Boy Scouts of America serves boys and young men through the Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, which are year-round programs specifically for boys in the first grade through age 18. DeLamarcos also noted that the Boy Scouts of America does offer co-ed programs, such as an outdoor adventure initiative called Venturing. But Venturing starts at age 14 and does not offer the same opportunities to earn merit badges as Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts do. Sydney specifically wants a shot at becoming an Eagle Scout like her brother Brian. Sydney has earned ample support for her endeavor, including from fellow scouts and the National Organization of Women. But her critics inevitably ask the same question, why don't you just join the Girl Scouts? Quote, "I know that almost everything that the Boy Scouts do, I want to do," Sydney said. "And if they're identical programs, then why are they separate?" Well, Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts are two distinct private organizations. While there may be some overlap in activities of their core mission statements and fostering leadership skills, they offer different programs. Even the Girl Scouts say as much, quote, "No, we're not meant to be the girl equivalent of the Boy Scouts, but it doesn't seem right for them," Archibald said, who is the head of the Girl Scouts, the chief girl expert at Girl Scouts of the United States. "I really laud the parents and the girls for finding their space that it is," Sydney says, taking scouting and skills involved so seriously that she sought membership in troops outside the United States. She is a full dues-paying member of the Troop of Ontario, Canada, one of a dozen countries with co-ed scouting. In fact, Sydney recently earned the Scout Chief Scouts Award, Canada's highest honor in scouting, and has the badge and also a letter of congratulations from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to show for it. Oh yeah, that big leftist guy. Never mind the fact that her father, Gary Ireland, a lawyer graduated from Columbia University, has an extremely lengthy social media interest in gender inequality and different progressive scams and progressive causes, like Bronx volleyball star fights for spot on boys' varsity team, or how Wall Street's bro talk keeps women down. Wall Street must do a better job at changing the culture of degrading women. gender parity begins in the boardroom. And this guy is obviously looking at an angle going, hey, I can further my law career, and at the same time, I can fight for the progressive crap that I believe in. I don't think it was something that he pushed for as an activist right off the bat, but I think his progressive tendencies and leanings lent itself to the availability of seeing an opportunity once his daughter decided, I want to be a Boy Scout too. You know? I mean, in fact, read the beginning of the change.org petition. It says, I cannot change my gender to fit the Boy Scout standards, but the Boy Scouts can change their standards to include me. That, in a sentence, has been the left's agenda since day one. They form special interest groups that are focused at pointing at areas that absolutely no one was offended with. We didn't even have a problem with. We just were doing our business, going about our day, and we get relentlessly attacked into submission. And Hillary Clinton was going to be the baton torchbearer carrier who was going to be ordained as Queen of America in order to right the social justice wrongs of not being allowed to drop a deuce into the commode of your birth gender or to defecate all over the respectable institutions to create social justice warrior outrage over whether or not you want to be a Weeblo over being a brownie. You know, important injustices like that, keeping everybody down. But it was misogyny that took Hillary Clinton out. And the party of social justice reconciliation is also the party against greed, even though they're financially loaded at the top. And we have to fight it every day and push it back. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. Check out my podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn app, Spreaker. You can also get the free Adrian Slade Roku channel and listen to the podcast there. Tune in next week. I'm out of here. God bless. Good night.